Dave, as a friend, I give you 5 stars.
Out of?
5.
Oh.
Aaron?
Oh, yeah.
As an intro bit, I give this 1 star.
Welcome to Yak Babies.
I'm 1,000.
I'm 1,000?
Yeah.
Brutal.
Well, you don't have any pants on.
I do have pants on.
Pants.
Yeah.
Pajama pants.
They're rolled up.
You have pajama shorts. Those are rolled up significantly. You have pajama shorts on.
Pajama
They're not
shorts.
I think he rolls them up.
Oh, I thought they were maybe cutoffs.
What?
The thread is coming loose from the crotch.
Let your penis alone.
Oh, my God.
God, I'm at the distance.
I feel like I'm in a zoo right now.
We're going to have to stop and come back in an hour when Aaron is
You
done.
Just lost your 1 star. It is now
0 stars. 0 stars.
I earned. Came for a podcast and all it was him grooming his penis. You can't even hear it because it's on audio.
All right, let's keep going. Let's keep going. This is the intro. For sure.
3, 2, 1.
So we're talking about reviews. No, we're not starting over. This is it.
Hold on. Let me pull the pub sponsors up.
So today...
Hold on.
You have to start again. There's no way I can edit that properly.
You can definitely get some of that out. That's great.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Apple Jacks. Jacks. My name is Aaron. I'm here with my personal pals, Dave.
Hello, Aaron.
And Brick.
What is Jacks?
I don't know.
Sounds dirty.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
He just gave them a new
Say hi to the people, Brick.
Said Jacks on the box.
That's what I wrote, yeah. We also have a personal pal, Nico, calling in from overseas. Hello, Nico.
Hello.
Topic today is reviews and criticism. We talked about reviews a lot on this podcast, but not in an organized manner, I don't think.
I wonder if we have. I was going to say that it feels like for a long time we've been trying to find a way to talk about them, but have failed.
Yeah, I think it's come up a lot, but not in like a coherent topic, right?
And now we just decided to go straight in from the front and just talk about reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the Applejack way.
Jax.
Okay, so... I kind of thought, because this is a lot of ground to cover, and we've all been involved in book reviewing, so boy, there's a lot to talk about, but I think maybe an easy way in, a way to start is, how do you guys presently use book reviews? Where do you find them? That's it. I thought I had a third question, but no.
No, it's a great question. I think my answer, unfortunately, is not at all, really. Yeah. Almost never. I do love reviews, and I read them for movies, especially... And then comics and music, but books almost never.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, me too. I stopped reading. I will read a book review on a book that I've never heard of. And it's not so much the review part. It's to, you know, if I see like on Twitter, like some NPR or whatever thing that says, here's an upcoming book that's kind of exciting. Like I will read it almost more as like a preview than an actual
yes, right.
review. And I'll only read that enough to tell if I'm interested in the book or not.
Right.
And I probably won't read the whole thing. I find I don't really trust book reviews because they don't seem that reliable, and they haven't for a long time. And I don't have any reviewers that I... That
you say not reliable. What do you mean by that? Or why not?
Well, without shitting on literary fiction as we're wont to do, it seems like most reviewers are... You know, it's kind of like the same phenomenon as like fucking cable news or like the Weather Channel naming all the fucking storms. Hmm. You know, it's like reviewers want to be the one, if it feels to me, like a lot of time reviewers, like if it's an obvious pan, then they'll do it. But it seems like they want to be the one to like highlight this new voice you've never heard of or whatever, or say something really kind of tepid but mostly positive on an established author's not very good book, but then they're too afraid to go after the author, you know what I mean? So they just don't seem that honest. Or so, I shouldn't say they don't seem honest. It seems like...
No, I think you should say that.
Yeah, but I don't mean it necessarily... I mean, I think it is dishonest, but it feels a lot of the time like they are factoring in the politics of their job and the success of their newspaper more than they are the actual criticism. Like, I think the criticism is taking a back seat to, I don't know what, to readership or to publicity. I don't know. It seems gross.
I think a lot of critics are thinking ahead rather than thinking in the moment. Like if I think a lot of critics think, well, if I publish a negative review of this book, then a lot of people might shit on me for that because this is a beloved author and we're all supposed to, you know, we're all one big writing community, so we should all treat each other's work.
Yeah, I can say from experience, that's not what happens usually, I think. I remember at one time I really shit hard on something back on Chamber 4, and then the publisher then sent me a copy of literally every book they've ever printed. I gave you some.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and then I, again, shit on another book.
I think a lot of reviews are written positively as favors, for one thing. There's a whole lot of log rolling that goes on in the business. A lot of reviewers are thinking, what will happen if I publish a negative review of this popular book or this popular writer? What might happen when my book comes out? And I'm looking for favorable reviews.
Right. You don't want to shit where you eat.
Right. And if you're part of the community, then you're vulnerable to that kind of criticism.
I mean, it's
Dave, you have the most experience
of
any
critic. It's so rare to see an author like that's reviewing another book that actually pans it. Because almost every author that reviews a book is like,
I don't even read reviews by authors.
Right. And then there was that whole movement that we talked about, I think in our former iteration of all these magazines and writers talking about how we shouldn't publish negative reviews of books at all.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Remember
the,
that?
I forget what that place was called, but it was like, you know what? I think that McSweeney's was kind of like that. Like they didn't want negative reviews there.
Right.
Yeah, McSweeney's may have been one of them, yeah.
Ignoring a review or not reviewing something is different than reviewing it negatively, right? So if you are a publication, like we don't do positive reviews, we don't want to sort of feature negative reviews on our site, and you just review things that are going to like meet that standard, is that different than reviewing things that are bad but saying they're good?
Well, I think it is. Like, the outlet matters. Like, if McSweeney's is only going to, you know, they're going to kind of do a curation of these are the books we think are good this month and here's our reviews of them, I don't see a problem with only doing positive stuff. But right. When, like, the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune or whatever, they have a long history of sort of being they take the new stuff, the most notable stuff, and then they review it. They're not typically picky and choosy with what they do. They do the big releases, right?
Right.
I don't know. It feels fake. It feels disingenuous.
You know what's kind of weird to me is like from our time when we ran the book review website, the reviews that pissed me off the most that I still clearly remember from other places were not necessarily like pandering reviews of bad books, maybe because those are just so common that it's hard to get pissed off about them, but they were pans of books that I really liked. Not only that, but pans of books wherein the reviewer clearly like didn't understand the book or misunderstood not even like an arguable element, but like there was one thing where I read a book and I reviewed it, and then the like New York Times review came out and the guy described the opening scene of the book and it was like one person murders another person and he got it wrong, like who the two people were, and they weren't described exactly, but it was like it dramatically changed the reading of the book. And it was like, I mean, if you get this, it was like the equivalent of saying like this person murdered their brother and instead they murdered their father. You know, like, they dramatically would change the whole rest of the book based on, you know, and just after having that, and then it was like, that kind of, I don't know, that to me is actually worse than not panning books, like.
That reminds me of the whole Janet Maslin fuck up that you kind of jumped onto a few years ago with that Patrick Somerville book.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Oh, that's what this is, yeah. Oh, okay.
But then there was another one. There was a review of the Sisters Brothers where it was a pan, and it was like, because to me it's actually seems worse to, because I mean I guess to me like there are so few good books and so many good reviews, you know, to miss one that's actually good is more heartbreaking to me than not panning.
Do you think that is an accident of fate or is that like intentional? Like, we can think of examples of the past of books that are considered classics now that weren't ignored or that were ignored or were reviewed unfavorably in the past, right? and then sort of things change, and all of a sudden someone picks up on it, and our tastes change. Is that a problem of criticism, or is that, do you think, like a modern problem of how entrenched reviewers are with their subjects in the field?
Yeah, I mean, it's okay to disagree with a review, you know, because different people are going to have
right.
Like making a mistake and then basing your judgment, that's a poorly written review by the sound of it. But, you know, the New York Times used to famously do two reviews of a book, and one was positive, one was negative. Hmm. And in a way, that's shitty. But in a way, you know, it's kind of the Siskel and Ebert thing. They never agreed. They didn't always agree, right?
So, right. That's what we call the Kakutani two-step.
The Kakutani, yeah. Thank you, Mike Beeman. But, and I don't know if this is relevant, but I would rather read a pan of a book I like than than praise of a book I hated.
Really?
I would rather read a pan of anything.
Yeah.
Why?
I find it more interesting.
Yeah. Hmm.
I trust it more.
But that's interesting, because that's a relatable feeling, I think, but also a very interesting one, because it's so tied to a specific emotion, right? Like Schadenfreude, like you're feeling good from someone's bad feeling.
But I think it's, and I don't know if it's inherently this way or not, but it's more trustworthy if someone skewers something, because you have to back it up. You can't just, you know, I don't like this book because there's black people in it. You could do that, but that's not criticism, right? You have to actually identify the things that aren't good. And it's a lot easier to call something good without idea. You don't need to fact check yourself so much on praise as you do for criticism, I don't think.
But good criticism should do both, right? Good critics should, if they're praising a book, should be able to support that and back that up with reasons and well-drawn examples.
I agree, and I think that's why I don't see a lot of good criticism. You know what I mean? Or positive criticism. Or, you know what I mean? It's been a while.
Interesting.
So can we talk about, I used to use book reviews as a way to find new books to read. Now that I know what happens behind the scenes, now that we know what happens behind the scenes, I don't do that anymore.
Hmm.
What I do is I will
doesn't
read
that. Yeah,
he said
I saw the smile. Yeah,
yeah.
As I was saying it,
I was like, oh, fuck, who's
Applejack fuck boy.
There we go. What I will do is, after I read a book, partly maybe especially if I have some questions about it, but usually if I do like it or have a reaction of some kind to it, I will read the reviews of that book.
Mm.
Just to see what other people thought of it. Sometimes maybe to unlock something or hope to unlock something that I was confused about, or, you know, something that if like I feel like something profound happened and I missed it, then
yeah,
maybe another reviewer will have picked up on it.
Yeah.
But that's the only time now that I'll read reviews.
That makes sense, though. That's a very common, I think, version of criticism, is to use it as the conversation once you've experienced the text, right?
Or validation.
Validation or resistance or whatever you want to call it. Like sometimes reading a bad review of something you love is great, because you're like, fuck this person, I want to like fight with them verbally or mentally.
Or vice versa too. If I don't like a book and I read a positive review, I'm thinking, oh, look at this idiot.
Yeah.
Then I can swat this guy.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we endorse that on Yak Babies.
We do not.
But I think that seeing criticism as a post versus a pre-conversation makes a lot of sense to me. I think I probably am with you on that. Although some notable books that I have enjoyed came from reviews that I heard first or read first. I'm thinking in particular of one right now. First heard a review of Last Night at the Lobster on NPR when I was just started grad school. And it stuck with me. Maybe it was after that. I don't know. It was sometime in the past for a long time. And so when you finally read it, I was like, oh, yeah, that book. I wanted to read that book for a long time. And it was a positive review for sure. And so that's why it stuck with me. So I was like, this book sounds really good. And the reviewer loved it. In that case, it turned out the book was fantastic and we all liked it. So that paid off. But usually I'm the opposite.
So I feel the way I feel really specifically about newspaper book reviews, right? Because I will, if I hear a podcast or a radio show, or even if I see some tweets or whatever about books and they pass some kind of opinion on them, I'll be interested more often than not to at least go and like look them up and say, hey, that book sounds kind of cool. Let me Google it and see
right.
I like the cover or whatever. Right. And in a way, that's criticism. In the way when we do, you know, the like, what are we reading things? That's the kind of thing I would listen to. And I'd hear people talk about five books and pick the one or two that I'd want to look into more based on their kind of broad strokes opinions. Like those have value to me when I hear or read them other places.
Right.
But there's something about newspaper or I guess just media outlet review of something where the express purpose is to pass judgment authoritatively, that it just doesn't, it rings hollow and it turns me off.
Well, I guess it's good for you then that there are not going to be any soon. I mean, like, good luck in 5 years finding more than
I stopped reading years ago. So, I mean, I'll read things from media outlets, but not their reviews. I gave up.
There are only a few left.
I think it's really depressing because I feel like we should be the people who are reading newspaper reviews and taking them seriously of anyone, right? Like our, not us specifically, but like our version of people who read literature and think about it or want to talk about it should be the ideal audience for book critics across the board, right? Newspaper, magazine, podcast, Twitter, whatever you're talking about. Right. And it's sad to think that the majority of us are reticent to engage with that.
But is that our fault for not engaging, or is it their fault for the quality of the thing? I would gladly still engage with those if the, what they were, what they're supposed to be, you know, but it just, you can see right through them.
Is this apply to other papers? Like, do you read the Globe reviews?
No, I honestly, I don't even read book reviews anymore. If someone sends me something and says, check this out, I'll read it.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, if I see, you know, if I see a review on NPR, like Twitter feed or whatever, I'll read the first paragraph and like look at a picture of the cover of the book and then decide for myself if I want to like learn more. I'm not going to read the review because I just don't.
Right. But I wonder if I wonder if there's a problem here of like New Yorkism, right? Or it's like consolidation of people in a certain place, like the literary community. Publishing tends to come out of New York as sort of our kind of like cultural capital, right? I wonder if you'd feel the same way if you'd read the reviews from the Globe or, I don't know, the Dallas Morning News or other papers.
Which is gone now.
The Globe?
No, the Dallas Morning News.
No, it's still around, isn't it?
No, they chopped their book section.
Oh, really?
I write for them all the time, and he got fired, and they stopped publishing new book reviews. No, that's
Gotcha. I mean, Aaron, honestly, I think it's a publishing industry problem and not a newspaper problem.
Yeah.
I think they have too much control over what is written about their things, right? And I feel like they're able to influence or prevent certain versions of reviews from coming. And I think that happened for so long that it changed the way those things were written.
Right.
And I think now what those things have become is it's an extension of marketing.
Right.
You know, is really what it is. It's just a marketing extension. Right. And those companies are, I mean, they're in cahoots with, you know, you go on the website for the New York Review of Books, and guess what? All the ads are, right? They're ads for those books that they're quote unquote reviewing. Like it's all just conglomerated, and it doesn't. You know, I think we are the market for that, but that doesn't.
I mean, that's also like where else are they going to advertise? Like,
right? But I mean,
people those are people that you know read books that are going on that website,
right? But there's ways to keep those things distinct that I don't believe happen.
There should be a firmer wall between editorial and honestly, marketing.
And I think it's just too late.
It sounds similar to the problem of like access journalism, right? If you're too close to your sources, then you feel like this is the problem of what's her face, Maggie Haberman from the New York Times, right?
Fuck,
she's
her.
Too close to Trump, and so her reporting is not trustworthy. No, that makes sense.
Can we talk while we still have a few minutes about Goodreads and its place in all of this?
Well, amateur criticism
you guys use it.
Is really interesting. This I talk about in my classes a lot because I teach criticism as a genre. And I tell my students that we're going to focus on professional criticism because amateur criticism is easy, right? And that you can write a review on Goodreads of any quality, structure, format, style, tone, voice, whatever, with there's no editor or gatekeeper. And the challenge is to write something that sort of seems publishable and has a voice and have someone tell you yes or no. So I tend to eschew amateur criticism except for like Yelp. Like restaurant reviews.
But even then, I feel like all...
Wait, really? Yelp?
Yeah, if I'm going to a restaurant, it's my first like look is Yelp reviews.
I feel like...
those are all...
The vast majority of...
Like gamed.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, yeah, one, they're all gamed. Amazon is too. Yeah. I had a great...
What does that mean, gamed?
Like they pay like paid reviewers.
Oh, okay.
Like Yelp extorts restaurants basically to give them money or they'll let a whole shitload more negative reviews in.
And it seems like the reviews are always 5 stars or 1 star, you know?
Yes.
I know, I'll get all video game on you, but there's a website called Metacritic.
Yeah.
Which does aggregates of outlet reviews, but then it also has a section where there's like amateur user reviews, right? And there's been a, I don't know if it's still a thing, but for a while there was a real problem with developers attaching bonuses to review scores for the developers that work on
what, Fallout New Vegas?
Yeah, I'm sure it still happens. And so what happens is all those assholes, like the same people that are probably like the sad puppies at the Hugo Rewards a few years ago,
right,
and all those like right-wing like Gamergate secret internet Nazis, they'll just, even before like something comes out, they'll publish 1,000 one and zero star reviews and whatever and just tank things.
Right.
Right. And then a horde of super fanboys who cosplay and attach their identity to whatever the anime is will then go and do 1,000 five star. And it's not in any way, like, no one's, it's not thoughtful, you know? And I'm sure in there are some really cool, like, some guy, just his hobby is to sit around and write some pretty neat amateur reviews, and there's probably some pretty good stuff buried in there, but the vast majority of it is just garbage. And Goodreads is the same way. You can't trust the star ratings on Goodreads because it's mostly, you know, people that are, they already like it.
Well, yeah. The problem with Goodreads for me is that almost every book is between like 3.8 and 4.4 stars.
Right. Yeah.
So then it's not even a five star ranking. It's like if a book is rated, so I don't know. I think we could talk about like how we actually use like different review, but beyond like specific like individual written reviews, because I think those aggregate sites are helpful kind of in those extreme cases. Like if I'm looking at a book and I see that its Goodreads score is 3.0, I'll be like, this must suck. Like, cause that's like way below the kind of average for books. And likewise, if it's like 5.0, that would to me be more meaningful than like one person reviewing
it. So will you ever read individual reviews of those books, or you just look at the stars and the number of ratings or whatever?
Just stars, and only for like outliers. Not even like if it's between, like I said, like 3.8 and 4.5 or whatever.
Yeah, see, that shit's not even on my radar.
Yeah,
you know, like if I'm at the point where I would look that up, I'm just gonna read the jacket copy of the book, and I'm gonna do my own process and decide if I want to give it a shot or not, because that data means nothing to me.
Yeah, for books.
So what? How about you other guys? How about Aaron and Dave? And also for other media, like, do you guys look at Metacritic or Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, I wonder too. We just, I don't know where it'll end up in the feed, but we just had we just talked about nostalgia informing so much of our choices for reading, and I wonder if maybe these are related in some way. Like, where do you go if not to reviews and Goodreads and stuff like that to find new books to read? In the end, it kind of leaves you alone to make your own choices based on such things.
Yeah, I mean,
not entirely alone.
Well, Nico is dismissive about them, and he was right too, because they probably were written by an intern. But I like those list things, not because I in any way trust that they're a measure of quality at all. But that, at least I know, like, here's some new books. Poke through these and see if any are interesting.
Right.
Uh-huh. I probably won't even read the things they write on those. I'll literally look at the titles and then the picture of the covers.
Yeah.
And I'll just, it's almost like going to a bookstore. And I'll do the same thing where I'll like want to read some old sci-fi book. I'll go to like the 50 best sci-fi books of the 20th century, and I'll scroll down the list and I'll find a few I haven't read, and that'll be kind of my starting point. And that's, I mean, that's sort of been my process for a few years at this point.
You do that too, Aaron?
Yeah, basically. I was going to say, I don't trust amateur reviews at all for anything. If I go to Rotten Tomatoes and look at for a movie, for instance, and look at the top critics, you can sort of sort the reviews between everyone and top critics. I always look at top critics exclusively. It's the only review that matters, or the percentage that matters to me. The one that's not true of is Yelp, because it's just lazy and shorthand to look at a Yelp review and be like, oh, people say this restaurant's 4 stars, like, let's give it a shot versus whatever. But even then, that's very rarely the most important calculation. I would be quicker to look at a single reviewer who I trust than an aggregate score from anonymous internet users. I just don't trust it. I don't have any faith in like, I don't know. This sounds very classist, but the average person, I guess. I don't.
See, I feel the opposite.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That, like, because, like, if it's one person's opinion, what are the odds that it lines up with yours? Like, every once in a while, you'll find, like, a critic who lines up with your sensibilities exactly.
But that's exactly it.
That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, that's the process, I think, is finding the person whose voice you trust. So I trust not entirely, but A.O. Scott's rather, from the New York Times, is a good critic, and I trust his movie reviews. I don't agree with him all the time or even half the time, but I like them, and so I can engage
you
that
like
voice.
Them as a reading experience.
Yeah, I think he's a good writer. And Richard Brody, and
that's something to talk about too.
Yeah, for sure. Like, criticism as pleasure is a totally different experience, right? Reviews that you don't agree with and don't line up with your views in the text can still be really enjoyable to read if the writer is good.
Right.
Richard Brody and David Denby from The New Yorker I trust a lot, and I like their views even though I don't always agree with them. This is just for movies especially. But I'd much rather find that person and work to find that person than to rely on the Goodreads aggregate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't personally see a corollary between popularity and quality. I don't.
Well, so my thought process is for those aggregate sites, it's kind of like, you know, at the county fair where it's like, guess how many jelly beans there are in the jar.
Yeah.
And like nobody can guess exactly, but the average of everybody's guesses is pretty spot on. Hmm. So that's kind of the way I treat them is not like, it's just like a herd mentality. Like, and it's only to me, like, it's only meaningful if it's an extreme. Like for instance, like we watched Paddington a couple months ago solely because it had one of the only 100% Rotten Tomatoes ratings ever, like one of seven movies ever.
Yeah, I thought of it. I thought of watching it too when I saw that.
And it's like that kind of outlier. That's like,
was it a top seven all time movie for you?
Nobody disliked this movie.
Yeah, what'd you think of it?
Yeah, what'd you think?
I thought it was fine. Like, I would also say, like, but that's the problem with that. With that,
but when
website,
Nico says
that
it kind of feels like he liked it.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, that's a rave from Nico. Yeah.
So I liked it. So, and I mean,
how many thumbs and boners do you give Paddington?
Paddington, I would give. What's the scale? Well,
you have two thumbs and one boner.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I'll give it one thumb and zero boners.
Wow. I thought Nicole Kidman was kind of sexy in that movie.
Dick down.
What was?
Nicole Kidman is the bad guy. She had like a whole like thing.
Oh, see, I don't even remember enough about to remember what she was. But so anyway, like what I'm saying is like if there is that kind of groundswell, like, people predominantly like this movie. It's not that I think that that's reliable. It's just that I think my odds are a little bit better.
Right. That makes sense.
With that. You know, like because it's all a crapshoot. Like, none of this is a guarantee that you're going to like something.
Yes.
And if the goal is to find something that you're going to like, then at least that kind of increases your odds.
Yeah. I mean, the whole discussion really is just a discussing about like how do we calculate our odds of pleasure, right? So you're trying to maximize. I mean, that's right. Like, you're laughing, but it's true. You're trying to maximize the value you're getting from a certain situation.
That's Aaron's gambling / brothel.
Yeah, that's why I'm always at the roulette with my dick out. You're trying to increase the odds that your experience will be good, right? And so looking at reviews is a way to game that, and it's not. Yeah.
But you don't do it.
I do, just not for books. Mm. Like movies, music, definitely. Right. I think there's something else going on with books for me that's different than that. But yeah, that's the whole game, is trying to figure out, like, can I use this time effectively, right? And if you're a paid critic, it doesn't matter. You can watch everything because it's your job, and to sort it out according to good and bad and sort of in the middle. If you're a schmo like the rest of us, you're trying to make that 2 hours you have between work count. And that's a different calculation.
As a critic, I think I always felt... my main job was to do my best to let people know whether or not they should spend their hard-earned money and little free time on a particular book.
Yeah.
And who should, I feel like.
Right.
Like,
that's important.
Yeah, that's kind of what I would always be thinking about writing book reviews is like, if you like, you know, X kind of a book, you'll probably like this. And it's not necessarily like... this is a good or bad book with a lot of them, but...
Well, I think there's two different modes here. Criticism as consumer guide and criticism as artistic and aesthetic experience.
Right.
You know, if you're writing reviews as, this is what you should do with your time and money, like watch this movie or read this book or don't, that's different than, you know, spending 1,000 words, you know, meditating on the ideas in this text and trying to figure out what it means. That's like a Samuel Johnson version of criticism, right? Which is a different... Right. An admirable and desirable in some ways version of criticism, but it's just a different animal.
Yeah, that seems more like criticism and less like reviewing.
Yes,
right.
That's
like,
that's
a line there.
Great way to put it.
I think I like criticism better.
I can see that for sure. Yeah,
Yeah, you can read criticism.
But that's why I think book. Just before I called myself a critic and then kind of stepped back and corrected it to reviewer.
Yeah.
So I never reviewer. Felt really like a critic. Right. I was just reviewing a book itself.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we review this episode and then get out of here?
I give it 5 stars.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. This is great.
On, what, 2 thumbs and 1 boner?
Yes. I give our own episode 2 thumbs and 1 boner up.
One dick up.
Jax.
One dick
up.
Aaron, I give your opening bit probably 2.5 stars.
Okay, that's 2 pants opening bit now. Yeah. That's harsh. This is unnecessary.
I'm sorry, but I like to be honest as a reviewer.
Yeah.
The Rotten Tomatoes score now is a 1-star review for the opening bit.
Yeah, I'm
I don't even remember what it was.
I'm sticking with 1 star on the 1,000 scale.
Fuck you. Nico, you want to weigh in on the opening bit?
Yeah, Aaron, I would totally give you 5 stars.
Out of?
1,000.
That's 5 times better than mine. Yeah,
that's true. Well, rate us on iTunes. Can you anymore? I guess you can't, right?
Yeah, you can. Then you should.
Okay. Well, but iTunes doesn't exist anymore. The podcast app, I guess, is what you should do, right? Yeah,
it's Apple Podcasts or whatever.
Yeah. But really, if you want to rate this podcast, here's the way you should do it. Go to patreon.com/yakbabies and give us $1. That's a 5-star rating.
I like the ultra smooth transition from fuck these aggregate reviews to so please rate us 5 stars on iTunes.
Right. Which I believe we have a 5-star rating, which Nico, according to your metric, would make us
a smash.
No, would make us not worth listening to.
Yeah. Oh, because we're too outlier.
We're the Paddington of podcasts.
Hey, I take that. Yeah, I love that fucking movie. The movie was great. Okay, so patreon.com/yakbabies. For $1, you can get access to our Patreon bonus episodes. There's stuff that's happening on this podcast that's not released in the main feed. I don't know if you know that. But I'd say like half the episodes are hidden behind the paywall because they're, well, too scandalous to reveal to the public. But for $1, you can get access to that shit. It's great. There's the author's draft came out recently, which is really fun. There's a power hour along with that as well. The horror draft from last year was so funny.
Scary draft.
Talk about Pumpkinhead.
Horror.
Like lots of really just gross stories too. Things that we don't want you to hear. Gross. Yeah, but we're publishing them anyway.
We record Aaron all the time.
Yeah, sadly. It's all there for $1. Follow us on Twitter @YakBabies and email us at YakBabiesPodcast@gmail.com. That's how you get in touch with us and let us know your thoughts on criticism and reviews in this podcast and everything. Until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies would like to send an extra thank you to everyone who listens regularly, and especially to those who have supported on Patreon, past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, and William Howard Taft. Thank you.
Oh.